In some churches today, they are marking the calendar by calling today Good Shepherd Sunday. Others are marking it as Earth Sunday. But I would like to suggest that here, right now, we actually call it Total Commitment Sunday. When we look at the image that we find in the first of our passages in the Gospel of John in chapter 10. Allow me to read it, and if you want to follow, it's in our pew Bible, page 1062, where Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep fold. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." As you were listening to that passage, or indeed following along, I wonder what image of a shepherd you had in your mind. Could it be something like this? Or perhaps that? Or even a third one? Where you have a nice, white, fluffy little lamb, and you have almost a nice, white, fluffy little Jesus to match. What sort of image is in your mind, and indeed, what sort of image should we have of Jesus? Could it be something like that? Or maybe even that. I'd like to suggest to you that at this point of time, you dispel from your mind all of those beautiful, plain images of what the shepherd would have been like in Jesus' time. And think about someone who is prepared to give up all to look after the sheep. Because that is what Jesus says the good shepherd was to do. So, Jesus said also that a flock without a shepherd will soon be gone. It may be stolen. It may be butchered. It may be taken by wild animals. Without a shepherd to protect the sheep in Jesus' time was without hope, without protection, and at great risk. And what's more, if the flock was gone, the families who must depend on it would also soon be gone. And if the families went, society would fall apart. So in that image of Jesus, the Good Shepherd, and the comparison with the hireling, who did not have the same commitment to the sheep, you have everything is at stake. Now, Jesus uses this image. He uses the image for a very good reason. That is that there is something that is critical, cannot be left to those who are not totally committed to the venture. That's why Jesus stresses, "I am the good shepherd." He says it twice to enforce the image into the mind of those that are listening to him. But indeed, that same image should be within our minds as well. The one who offers total commitment, who is prepared, as Jesus said in that passage from the Gospel of John, prepared to risk life and limb for whatever has been given to him to have the responsibility over. So it is crucial that it can't be left to anyone who is half-hearted. So the image of true commitment is that just as everything that counts in a shepherd's life, their time, their dreams, their finances, are all wrapped up in that flock. As I commented to the children, the shepherd in Jesus' time would actually sleep with the sheep. Jesus uses a lot of images, such as that he is the gate for the sheep, to protect the sheep at all cost. The one who lays down his life for the sheep. An image completely lost in the Australian environment, of course. But, however, the shepherd and the sheep metaphor is a lesson for leadership. It's a lesson for leadership of the disciples, because Jesus is talking, he knows what is going to happen to himself, how he is going to be called upon laying down his life for the sheep. But it's also a message for the people that are reading the Gospel of John, that they will know that Jesus laid down his life for them, and that they are, at a time of persecution, being called to lay down their life. But it's also a message for you and I, that we, at some time, may be laying down our life, may be challenged by someone, and we will be called upon to justify who Jesus is in our life. There are people right at this very moment who don't have the luxury of sitting on nice, soft cushions like we have, that are hiding away just so that they may worship, just so that they may be part of the Christian community. Now, Jesus is starting a new community, and he talks about this community that a person who is going to lead must be known by God. Just as he commented, "I know God and God knows me." The person must know God and be willing to spend their energy freely and even their lives in the care of the community in which they find themselves. So they must be known by God. Do you believe that you are known by God, that God knows you? Yes? No? There's a few nods. Good. God knows you. Be assured, God knows you. God knows you even more intimately than perhaps you even know yourself. Because it was God who knit you together in your mother's womb, as the psalmist reminds us. Do you know God in return? Have you taken the opportunity to build up a relationship with God? Because that's what this model of leadership is all about. The total commitment and the building up of a relationship with someone. Now, I was once asked, and I will never forget, the little girl in grade 4 at the Harristown Primary School in Toowoomba. I was teaching RE that day, and I asked, has anyone got a question? And she put up her hand and she said, yeah, Reverend Bob, can you tell me how, and this is her word, how I can have a relationship with God? Grade 4. And I said, well, what about, how do you have a relationship with someone in the class? And she said, oh, well, I talk with them, I find out what they like, and I invite them around to my place, and we share some time together. And I said, listen to that for a minute. Class, listen to what's just been said. Here's how you build a relationship with someone. You talk to them. And I said, when we do that with God, we call it prayer. We talk to God. We call it prayer. We spend time with that person. We let them know what we like and what we like about them. And we find things of interest. This is how you can build a relationship with God as well. By telling God the things that you like, the things that hurt you, the problems that you have. And so we build a relationship with God by sharing. And I personally, every night, enjoy my time to be able to speak with God. Oh yes, there are those arrow prayers that we commented about in that first song. They're shooting the arrow prayer to God at any time of the day or night. But I like to look back, reflect, and thank God for the things that have happened during the day. And I know God knows all about them, because they were the experiences that God laid before me during the day. I also apologize for the times when I haven't taken the opportunity to do something that I know God may have wanted me to do. Because out of my free will, I've just let them go. And I also take time to look forward, to look at the things that are coming up. Perhaps the next day, perhaps later in the week, perhaps in a month's time. And ask for guidance as a way of developing that relationship to know God and to be known by God. And the task for the Christian, I believe, is that you don't live as a Christian in isolation. You are a member of a community. We are challenged to belong to communities, whether it be family, whether it be a neighborhood, whether it be a nation. We are challenged to live in community and to show that we are endeavoring to make a difference. Now, I know that there are people here that belong to different community organizations. But my question is, do those organizations know that you are a Christian? Do they know that you belong because you want to make a difference within their group? That you want to offer an opportunity of experiencing the life of Christ in their life just as much as you yourself experience the life of Christ? When I was the rector of the parish of Elchester, the local Lions Club gave me an international award. They gave it to me personally, but it wasn't meant for me personally. It was given to the parish, but because I was the rector of the parish, They handed it to me and it's got my name on it. It was an international award for community engagement. Such was our level of engagement within the community that it was recognised. I hold that award, but as I say, it was meant for the community. I wonder if we can say the same about the way in which we belong to organisations and that we are striving to make a difference. Now, leadership is not about the structure, it's not about doctrine, and it's not about theology. It's about relationship. You see, if it was about structure, and I know that this may sound a little bit contradictory, here I stand as an ordained minister in the church, in the structure of the church organisation, and that I offer a particular doctrine, and am versed in theology, but I would trust that we can all see the need for relationship rather than structure, doctrine, theology within leadership. Jesus says he's the good shepherd and then goes about showing that lived out. And the challenge is there for us as well. Now, I wanted to use a second passage this morning of a contradictory statement that comes up in all of this, and the way in which some structure is of contrast to the gospel. It's from the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 4. We might not read all of the verses, but from chapter 4, beginning at verse 5. The next day, the rulers and elders and teachers of the law met in Jerusalem. This is after there had been a controversy. The controversy was the fact that a crippled man had been healed, and the authorities wanted to know who was responsible. Now, I'll put the summary up. I trust that while I read this, if you look at that particular summary, you may see where I'm heading. The teachers of the law met in Jerusalem. Annas, the high priest, was there, and so were Caiaphas, John, Alexander, and the other men of the high priest's family. They had Peter and John brought before them and began to question them, "By what power or what name did you do this?" Then Peter, filled with the Holy Spirit, said to them, "Rulers and elders of the people, if we were being called to account today for an act of kindness shown to a cripple and are asked how he was healed, then know this, you and all the people of Israel, it is by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, but whom God raised from the dead, that this man stands before you healed." The ruling authorities of the time were working on their authority, trying to keep peace, and finding out who was in charge. Their system of leadership was structured. But on the other hand, Peter and the Christian way is to want to focus on the changed life of the man, on the change that had come about in that crippled man's life, which showed relationship. There you have the two at odds with one another. The authoritarian way, the Christian way. So, why did Jesus come in the first place? Jesus' incarnation Jesus' life on earth is all about living and breathing human beings. It's not about the rules, the norms, the structures. It's all about, I'll say it again, it's all about relationship. So the coming of Jesus, a person amongst, as one of us, shows us God's love and God's commitment to you and I. After all, Jesus gave his one and only Son that we may not perish but have eternal life. That is commitment that gives something that is unique to Christianity. So how do we show our love and commitment back to God? Well, if I can get on to the next slide, there we go. There's a lot of writing on that slide. But I'm just going to go on a brief walk for a moment. Because I want you, as a community here, to be just as challenged as those at the earlier service. When we think about how we show our commitment. Over here, we have a statement. It appears on the window. It's been there for several years. And apart from the fact that I'd really like to put on my school teacher hat and correct a small mistake that is in it, I wonder when it was, if it was, the last time that you had a look at what we are saying to the broader community by having that on our window. This is what it says, and if you can't read that, it's on the main screen. We love God passionately through worship. We love God passionately through worship. Is our worship hum-hum? Do we think about coming to church with a passion or with just a compulsion? How do we come? Do we show that we really, truly do love God? And we want to be here, and we want to engage in worship, and we want to be able to say thank you. The next thing it says is that we learn, teach, and grow in faith. I won't embarrass anyone by asking them to put up their hand, but is anyone reading any Christian literature at the present time? Is anyone in a study group at the present time? Is anyone? No, I said you didn't have to put your hands up. Just as well you're in the back row and it couldn't be seen by others. Pride's good, yeah. We are saying, by having that on our window, that we are learning and teaching and growing in faith. The next thing we say is that we're being Christ-like in the way that we live to make Jesus known. That old band that people used to wear, the WWJD, people stopped wearing them because they couldn't live up to it. Because they couldn't always justify the decisions that they were making during the course of the day, that there were things that they didn't. And they couldn't say that Jesus would do. And then we've got this statement, the next one here. Oh, and by the way, that's the one where I wanted to take out my red teacher's pen and put a capital C across. It's a small spelling mistake, but we're going to fix it. I was just looking for Janet, because she's over at the Sunday school, so I was looking for a nod from the church board. We love people through the belonging and caring for the community. As I said before, how do we feel about being part of this community? How do we feel about being part of the broader community? How do we show our Christian faith as we live in that broader community? And we share God's hope and promise with the world. We are all missionaries. I know several churches that have a sign above the door. As people are going out, they see it, and it says, "You are now entering the mission field." Little do they realise there should also be a sign on the way in saying, "You are entering the mission field as well." Because it's a two-way situation. Now, that's one thing, to have that. I put my changer down somewhere, because I wanted to move to the next slide, which says this: how will our relationship with God and our community to God be seen? For that, I've got to walk over this side, where I see those words written. HTK will be a vibrant church family with a heart and soul of people of God. That's what we say we are. That's what's been on those windows for years. If we live it, good. If we're not living it, we need to do two things. One of two things. If we're not doing it, we should take it down. If we are doing it, we should make sure that people know it. It's been included in all of our editions of the parish newsletters and the magazine. Maybe today is an ideal opportunity when we talk about total commitment. And by the way, you'll notice that I haven't mentioned a single thing about money. Because if you're committed, you're fully committed. And if I might just say, those people that have direct debits, when did you make the direct debit start? And is it time to increase? But I'll leave that for another time, and perhaps even another person to talk about. But if we are committed to our faith, committed to our parish, committed to one another, let it show. Let the people know, let everybody know that we are committed.